Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And welcome back to Meeting of the Minds. Today we have a very special show. I am here with Tri Bannock, all three. Lou, Ed, Steve, thank you very much for joining us.
You bet. It's our pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So super excited having you on the show. Your family name is probably one of the first names that my brothers and I heard from our dad back when we were kids, when we started wrestling, and saw your pictures up on the NCAAs this year during the show and everything. They had it during the commercial. So we're real excited to have you on. I wanted to start off talking about your background, growing up with one another. I know a little something about how it is growing up with brothers. What was your experience like with one another, the lessons that you've learned and how it's been together?
Yeah, Steve, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think, our upbringing was not normal. I think that's a gross understatement. We lost our family when Ed and Lou were three and I was four, and we document this in Uncommon Bonds: The Journey and Optimism, our book that we wrote a couple years back. So we started out in a kind of fragmented way. Ed and Lou joined me at our foster parent home, adoptive parent home, when they were 4 years old and I had just turned five. And from that point forward, we stayed together and grew up in North Jersey, and then ended up going to school in Port Jervis. And we're really fortunate to have seven teachers, and they just happened to be our coaches as well in football and wrestling, that really took us under their wing and mentored us. And one in particular, Mark Fowler, our high school wrestling coach, really set the frame for us in terms of realizing college as a real option for us. And of course, he was our math teacher and also our wrestling coach at Port Jervis. Just happened to be a little bit bigger than us weight wise, so he was the fourth workout partner, which was invaluable for us. And the fact that he was a better wrestler than we were at the time. I mean, it's just the iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another kind of thing. We had to go on every single day. You didn't want to tick him off because he would try to wail on you, every day in practice. So we owe a lot to Mark, a phenomenal human being, and really invested in us, as did the other coaches that we have in Port Jervis, New York.
Excellent. And now, was faith a big part of your upbringing? Talk about that. What principles are being passed down? What lessons that were able to form you guys to be so successful in the sport that's so hard?
Yeah, faith was part of it. I mean, when you go on these, the change, the uncertainty that we dealt with every day, and there's this larger thought that we always had that there's something more than just this. And And early on in our lives, I mean, we had that central focus that there was something greater, and that there were some things that, you know, as you get older, you think of in this way, there's a journey, there was something ahead of you. But the concept of having Ed, Steve, and I together and really being that not only feedback loop, but faith loop for each other. We were there continually for one another. And with freedom comes, you know, a lot of things. You can get in a lot of trouble, right? But faith was always sort of that anchor that brought us back and brought us down that moral path that, you know, let's do the right thing. And I think it provided discipline to us to be not only good athletes, but good students and good human beings. So it was early on, and, you know, I think all of us had that sense that there was something more, there is something beyond just us, and this journey is, you know, short in life, but at the end there's a heavenly father that you know, incredible designer of the universe and the world, and those sort of 4 years old as they are today. So that's been the central guardrail for us, is that faith.
Absolutely. And I look at it having priorities in line, and yeah. And in terms of faith, right, everyone says God, country, right? Well, also military service. I know that's something that's very important to the Bannock family. Talk about that, country, of course, being able to represent the country for the Olympics, service. You know, again, God, country, things are in a proper order. You have that perspective that I think you need to have to really be successful, and not just successful, but to be fulfilled in life.
And I'll turn that one to Steve, because he's got the, you know, he's got the 27-year military career, distinguished career, and defended our nation more than most human beings should have to. And I'll let Steve take that one, because, I mean, it's truly an honor to have him as a brother and someone that protected our nation.
Yeah, so you go back to, 1775 at Lexington and Concord. I mean, our nation, it was birthed by people who are willing to defend something that's pretty important, and that's the United States. And when I say the United States, it's an idea. You defend the idea of freedom and rights for everyone. Very early on there, we had people who had been oppressed in Europe, and wanted something better. I mean, in the genius that was involved in creating what they created, just every day it blows me away, and it's worth fighting for. You know, it's not free, and we have countless service members, around the world, defending the country and our freedoms and things like that. So, it was interesting. We got recruited by West Point, which is 1 hour door to door from Port Jervis. West Point coach came up, and he was sitting at our kitchen table, and had the three of us around there, my mom and dad, and Leroy Allitz, Coach Allitz. And coach said, "Hey, look, you know, I'm gonna get you guys down to West Point, give you a $250,000 education, the best education in the world, and you guys will be off and running, good to go." And of course, that was 1975-76 time frame, right? So we're coming out of Vietnam, at that particular juncture, we had some family members that had gone to Vietnam that were on my dad's side, and it just wasn't the time to go into the military at that time. So, I kind of spoke for Ed and Lou, said, we're really probably not going to go into the military, but it goes back to your previous comment about God's providence, right? As things would have it, Lou actually joined our ROTC first out at Iowa, and got me connected with just a tremendous man in our life, Lieutenant Colonel Mick Bartlemy. And again, the Lord puts people in your life as handrails, and Mick was that person. And he got Lou in the Army, and Lou served 3 years at West Point. And then we had all of us had Major General K.C. Lohr, Ken Lohr, 1956 Iowa national champion wrestler. He was a brigadier general at the time, And he turned out to be, he's the father of the modern day Rangers. And he turned out to be my mentor for a number of years. And he directed me on the into some of the elite units in the Army, the 82nd Airborne Division, and then spent 9 years in the Ranger Regiment, and deployed to 6 different combat zones, and and participated in 4 invasions of different countries. And when I think about the United States, all I think about is giving. What can I give? How can I serve my country? I'm back in service right now as an old broken down airborne Ranger civilian guy, running a college for the military, and very fortunate to have the opportunity and to serve again. So again, I've been around the world many times. There's no better place out there than the United States. It's something that and again, I go back to the idea. It's the idea that we have to protect, because it doesn't exist anywhere else.
Yep. There's a lot that can be said about that now, this day and age. We won't go off on a tangent, but we'll pray for our country and
yep.
pray for the preservation of our nation. And of course, on behalf of all of us, thank you very much to the Bannock family for your service. I mean, again, we can't say it enough, proper priorities. We always look at successes. Yes, successful. Yes, good people. And yes, happy. It's all three. It's happiness. It's success. And that stems from that priority order. So after all that, where did you end up deciding to go to college?
Yeah, Ed, why don't you take that one? Because I think you were the driver behind that, at least for I think us.
Yeah. Did you guys play any sports?
Yeah. After my sophomore year in high school, that summer I made the junior national team representing New York, and I went out to Iowa City, Iowa, and wrestled in the freestyle and the Greco-Roman national tournament. And I took fourth in the Greco, and I went 2-2 in the freestyle, but I learned a lot. And then the next year, my junior year, Lou's junior year, and Steve's senior year, we all three made the team, went out there, and again, in Iowa City, I only wrestled in freestyle, and I took second that year. I think, Lou, you took third.
No, I didn't place.
You didn't place in, and I'm not sure if Steve, what he did. But anyway, long story short, we got exposed to Iowa. We got exposed to the style of wrestling that is done on a national level rather than just in New York. And in Lou and I, our senior year, I went out and I took a third that year. And Lou, what did you take?
No, I didn't place.
You didn't place? Nope. And then that, but that got other people.
Keep bringing that up.
Yeah. I thought you placed. I thought you took third or something. Okay. Anyway, nope. Long story short, that exposure not only taught us how to become better wrestlers, but also got coaches interested in recruiting us to go to college. And I remember Wade Shallis recruited Steve, and Lou and I got recruited by John Marks was the person at Iowa that took an interest to us and started talking to us, and then talked to Gable about, hey, you got to recruit these guys.
And along the way, we, the high school national or the high school state tournaments, I think Dan sent Chris Campbell out 1 year at, I think it was our junior or senior year. And he reports back to Gable, Gene, he goes, hey, Gabe's goes, what'd you think of the two brothers and their brothers? And he goes, yeah, he goes, they don't know a stitch of technique, but they got heart. And Dan goes, I can work with heart. So, and it was a hard decision because, as Ed mentioned, Steve ended up going over to Clemson. It was a year ahead of us on a full scholarship. And that was really the beginning of our, where we were being separated from one another. And that cord that I mentioned earlier got unwound by one thread, but it was a short-lived unwind. And, Steve, what was it, about a year and a half later, maybe 2 years later, that you joined us at Iowa?
Yeah, but, when I went out after my first year at Clemson, you guys were there at Iowa. I saw the best wrestling program in the country, and it was a meat grinder. I mean, it was I really can't put into words what Gable does with athletes. It's the most unique thing I've seen from any leader or coach, his ability to push people beyond anything they can ever dream of. And then once he gets them to that point, then he's able to really use your capability. And he did that with everybody that was on the team. If you were part of the team, you experienced it. So, but anyway, I saw what a meat grinder it was. And I went back to Clemson for my second year. And I had made the decision when I left in that summer that I was gonna get reunited with Ed and Lou, because I could see the pressure that was there and how it was going to be pretty daunting for both of them to deal with some of the externalities that are just Iowa wrestling. I mean, again, these things you really can't articulate. It's just you're in a room where it's literally the best man is that day, and there the best man that day it rotated. I mean the competition was unbelievable. So I decided just to leave Clemson, drop my scholarship, and just walked on at Iowa so I could be there with Ed and Lou to kind of help them, with some of the stress and just get reunited. I mean, there's an intangible there about the three of us being together, and it turned out okay.
I would add a couple things to the Iowa experience. I mean, one is, we played heavily, and I think Ed, in my mind initially was, well, here's a team that's already done it. They did it, I believe, in 1975. They did it in 76 again, and then my senior in 78, they did it again. And, in between that year, 76, 78 was the year that we really got introduced to Iowa. And we said, here's a team that's already got the formula figured out, the culture in terms of what's necessary to win. Steve mentioned the workout room. I mean, it was any given day, there was a new guy that was kind of king of the hill there. And so you look at it and say, here's a program that's already done it. Why would we not go to that program? And we're fortunate. And I really spoke about this a couple of weeks ago on a thing with Gable. Gable did a really great job. Like we had in high school, we had really good sponsors and mentors, Mark Fowler being probably the preeminent one. But, I would say Jay Robinson, Chuck Yaglet, and Mark Johnson did just a wonderful job complimenting Gable, and Gable gave him that space. And to me, that was what the fun part. Ed, you may remember this when we were freshmen, and talk about sponsorship, Dean. So Jay Robinson, it's probably illegal today to do this, but Jay would come over to our dorms at 5 a.m. and we'd meet him outside. And that was the advent of the Nautilus weightlifting equipment. The only place that had it was Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And Jay said, look, I'll drive you guys up there every morning, 5 o'clock, and we'll do a workout up there. But you got to be getting, I'm not going to come and wake you guys up. You guys got to be ready. And Ed, how long did we do that for? I mean, it was months that we did that. And what a tremendous Nautilus sacrifice.
But the Nautilus equipment guys put some down in the locker room at Iowa City. I remember that because they finally realized that we were serious. And there was two or three of those down there in our locker room.
Yeah, but it speaks to that team ethic and the sponsorship that we've been blessed all along our athletic career. And part of it, I think, Gene, is what you guys and your brothers also. I mean, if you own it, you step up and take responsibility and want to get better, there's lots of people that'll help you in this world. And, fortunately, we didn't have a lot to hang on. We, family didn't have a lot of wealth or any wealth. And we had each other. We had some athletic talent. We had some pretty good minds about it. And, we stuck together. We're stronger together. And, as Steve mentioned, he joined us out in Iowa. And he's right. I mean, there was a lot of pressure as you leave. You're 1,000 miles away from home. There's a lot of pressure. And that homesickness never really developed, but it was, there was always that longing, to have the three of us brought back together. And I'm sure glad it did, because, I would say every bit of success I had at Iowa, and certainly Ed would probably chime in on this as well, is because Steve was, you know, there was, you know, kind of directing us and helping us through tough times.
Yeah, the big thing there was that Steve, being a year older, he led us. We were being led by our big brother, Steve. And what was interesting is we did meet him at Iowa to make us better. And then once we got there, and then buying into the junior national trip, the junior national tournament 3 years in a row, really taught me a lot about the sport of wrestling. And it exposed me to a lot of things that, you know, and Mark Fowler was the impetus behind that. We didn't have the money to go to that. Mark Fowler went out and talked to the businesses and got the money necessary for me to go out my first year. And then Lou and Steve and I the second year, and then Lou and I the third year. I mean, we owe so much to Mark Fowler and all that he and his staff did. It was ridiculous how much they did for us. I mean, it just, we can't repay him, but we can pay forward as we do speaking and camps and just other things just to help people. When we're at Iowa, the big thing to me that I studied Gable, I studied Robinson, I studied Yagla, I studied Johnson to see how, and Mark, and then we also had John O'Marks, and I wanted to see what they did, and they were real. If you wanted to win, here's what you needed to do. And Jay Robinson said, look, you want to win nationals, you got to take somebody down, you got to get away from underneath. You got to get them out, get out from underneath. You do that, you win nationals. And every day, every practice was working. You were working so that you had a setup shot and finish so you can take someone down. You were working so that you can get out from underneath, particularly if a person rode with the legs. How are you going to win? What are you going to do? What techniques are you going to employ to make sure you can go out and win the match so that you can get to the finals and win the finals?
You know, I was talking to a runner-up at the Nationals here a couple of weeks ago. He's through a family member. He's friends, and they're next-door neighbors. And I was talking to him, and I said, you know, here, and he, like I said, he was a runner-up, and I said, you know, here's what I saw. And I said, you know, what's different at the program that you're at versus what, you know, Stevie and I went through at Iowa was, I think at Iowa we played chess and not checkers. By that, it's not one move and done. And that's what I was trying to explain to this young wrestler who had a, you know, really nice tournament but didn't win it. And I said, you made that one move and you were done. And that was the thing that I don't know whether it was maybe 6 months or a year after Iowa, there wasn't a concept of, well, you know, I'm going to just do this move. Every move was a setup for another move. And that chain wrestling, that sense of, you know, you were 8 or 9 steps deep in terms of what you could do. And you were, and I mentioned this on the Gable thing a few weeks ago. I mean, there was a sense of fearlessness because, you know, whatever position you could, you know, you ended up in, you weren't going to stop. You're just going to keep going. And here's 6 or 7 more steps you're going to go through until you're on top. Or whether that was when, you know, trying to get out from the bottom, whether you're trying to do leg attacks or upper body, and they just flowed into them. And I think that's what we called it, flow wrestling or something like that. And that was uniquely Iowa, though. We had a little bit of that in Port Jervis, but boy, they really took it to a new level at Iowa and made us think about continuous wrestling, not one and done. And that was the program that I enjoyed, part about the program that I enjoyed most is we were that type of wrestler. We didn't stop after the first move. It, you know, wasn't stop until you pinned the guy.
You know, but
about the Iowa program was the Hawkeye Wrestling Club was a new thing in college wrestling. And that, it would be analogous to college football players practicing with pro football players on a regular basis. How much better are they going to be? They're going to be tremendously better. So with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club and the wrestlers they had there in the Iowa room on a regular basis, the Iowa wrestling team had to get better, had to become better wrestlers because of their day-to-day workouts.
And I said this, you know, when I had that great honor to speak for Mark Fowler when he got inducted to the Wrestling Hall of Fame. Wrestling is a man maker, and I'm glad to see that you know, it's been open to women as well, and it produces the intangibles, right? the life skills. I can't tell you the number of times, as a mechanized commander driving over the berm in Saudi Arabia, going into Iraq, where, you think about all the things. I mean, in a flash, it runs through your head about all the things that you've endured in your life, and can I deal with this? Or whether it's, doing a combat parachute assault in Afghanistan, or, patrolling the Hindu Kush mountain range up in Afghanistan, or parachuting into Iraq again in 2003, you have those intangibles. And, part of the problem, going to Iowa, is that Gable creates very, very unique people. And when you step out of the laboratory into the real world, people are not, they don't know how to handle you, because you've been trained and shaped to do things at a certain level, and people look at you like you're crazy. So it's the life skills. It was just such a unique place. But anytime that I've ever been knocked down in my life, it was my faith in wrestling that got me back up on my feet.
That's it. That's that wrestling mindset, so to speak, that develops. And I got the book right here, the New Breed. I guess my screen's cutting out, but you guys have all over the book. But page 47, there's, if we can see in there, there you are. Yeah. Great stuff. And that's excellent. But talk about your book. We started speaking about it before the call, Uncommon Bonds, and your three principles of success, which I'm sure there's a lot built on top of that, because we'd like to make sure to put a link in the show notes and make sure everyone buys the book.
Yeah, I'll start out, because it's actually something I was thinking about in, I was a communications major as an undergrad, and I've, living this story, is one thing, and then putting it on paper is another thing, because then you got to go out and actually get all the real facts and the real stories. And I was finishing up at West Point. It was my final year at West Point, and I reported to our colonel, and he said, "What are you gonna do with your life?" And I said, I've been accepted to Penn State to do my MBA, but I may delay it a year or so, because I've got this project I wanted. And he got talking to me about it, and the project was Uncommon Bonds, and I had just written A New Breed. And so he talked to me about an hour. He goes, "Hey, Lou," he goes, I love you like a son, but I'm telling you, you don't have enough life experience to write the book that you want. Because there'll be a day that you'll know you'll have the right life experience, and you'll put it in the right frame, and it will be natural in terms of when you start thinking about this." And it actually was the year Steve retired from the military in 2010. We started talking about stories, and it was about over a 4-year period. We just started thinking about them and capturing them. And then in earnest, Steve, I think, and Ed, about 2014, we started putting pen to paper, and we published the book, I think around 2015, April of 2015. And it's really meant to share, some lessons, and there's, multiple lessons that come from it, from, Steve mentioned this earlier, iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another, Proverbs 27:17, optimism, that's your roots. You got to be optimistic, builds character. Steve just mentioned that you come out of that room with intensity, you come out of it with purpose, and you are, 3 or 4, years ahead in terms of mental maturity than a lot of young men and women coming out of college. So there's lots of good lessons in there, the ability to adapt. I'll let Ed and Steve kind of chime in, but that was really sort of the predicate to why, the book happened. Because at that time, we also felt that there was a need in our nation for something positive that, if you own it, as I mentioned this earlier, if you own it and you're willing to put the hard work in, there's not a better country in the world in terms to go down your journeys, seek what you want. The only reason you don't get it is because you don't go after it. And it's pretty linear in my mind in terms of that. But I'll let the brothers kind of add to it, because we each had different aspects of it that we were involved in. And you know, we wanted different things to come out of it. So, Steve and Ed, if you guys have any thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the you kind of touched on it at the end there, Lou. You know, it's about optimism, man. You live in the greatest country in the world. You ought to be optimistic. And, you know, and ours is a story. I mean, it's a story for everybody, really. I mean, I think you can laugh, and everybody, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback about people who had shared experiences. But one of the things that was kind of unique with us that I think can help a lot of people is when you're homeless and you have nothing, you can still be very, very successful, but you got to work. You got to work, and you got to go after it. And you can't quit, you know? And so if you're willing to do it, you can do it in this country. You know, you can live the American dream. You can be what you want to be. You know, some of the countries I fought in, that is not the case. That is not the case. You cannot be what you want to be. You got to leave that country to be what you want to be. And so that's a tremendous gift, and we want to share the gift. You know, we had nothing. We lived in houses that didn't have running water. We would carry buckets of water into our house out of a little pipe that, was a well that was drilled in our backyard. And you try doing that in December in New Jersey with 2 or 3 feet of snow, and that water's running out constantly. So it's like a little ice pond. You're carrying, you know, 50-pound cast iron buckets into your home, so you have water, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's there for the taking. And, you know, and we described that in the book, I think pretty well. And I think in a humorous way. My wife at times was laughing hysterically, and then she flipped the page and she was crying, you know, with, you know, big alligator tears and that kind of thing. So, you know, I think it's a book that resonates with people.
You know, one thing.
Thanks, Luke. The thing about the book is, as I read it and then I thought about it, we didn't know what we didn't know. I mean, we didn't have experience to go on. We were there. We had a situation. We had a goal in mind, and we did it. We didn't. In retrospect, we look back now and we say, yeah, we had it pretty bad. And yeah, you know, we worked hard. We had people that looked after us, our coaches, obviously mom and dad, Ellen and Stephanie Tooley, and our aunts and uncles and nieces and nephews and cousins and stuff that we were part of the family. We felt connected, but we didn't know what we didn't have in the early time. And we just did our best. Our dad and our mom, they were simple folks. And you said, whatever you do, do your best. Whatever you do, be the best at it you can be. And, you know, that's the motto that we went by, you know, do your best. And we're very successful, and we're happy about it.
You know, sort of the paradox of sport in life is the mental aspect. And we picked up on that pretty early, the concept of being resilient, adaptive, and innovative. And a lot of people don't pick up on that earlier because they don't have the reason to. They've got everything they need, so they've never really been tested. And to me, that's the thing, the greatest gift we've ever received, I think, is that gift of, you know, hard knocks, because it created that sense that, one, if you're a continuous learner, you go out there and you make yourself better every day, and not just in sport, but everything you're doing. You know, I know all three of us have carried that on to our professional lives. We, you know, continue to read. We're avid learners. But that sense of mental aspect that sport brings to you is something that resonated with us, because we're absolutely willing to put the hard work in. And then what most people don't do, Gene, and it's a rare group of people that actually do, they actually believe, okay, I put the hard work in. And then you mentioned earlier, before Ed and Steve got on, the anxiety that people have. And I always felt through preparation, which is that continuous learning to get better and better and better, that anxiety level should go down. And I would say all three of us did a pretty good job of, you know, you reach a level of confidence where it's not arrogance, but a level of confidence that, you know, this is all mental, and I've got them beat, because I know, you know, no one's worked harder than us. And I know I can beat him on the mat if there's enough time. And that's the other predicate we always used to have and talk about is the only reason we got beat is because time ran out. I mean, it was that simple. You know, if you give us another 3 or 4 minutes, we'd win. And that's kind of the mindset we had. And we, you know, just never give up. And that mental agility, that mental resilience is, to me, that's been probably the best guardrail I've had. And just, you know, if you believe it enough, you got family and obviously friends that want to support you, but you got to believe it. I mean, you know, but Steve always says, you know, take the next step. And we got knocked down an awful lot of times, but just got up and took that next step, took a little coaching along with it. And, you know, some good things happened along the way.
That's great. And as I look at the website here for the book, BannockPowerOf3.com, that's the number 3. I see the 3 pillars, faith, innovation, leadership. Like we said before, you need your daily fill, F-I-L, faith.
Oh, right.
So talk a little bit about, we hit on faith, we hit on leadership. Talk about innovation and how that's important.
Yeah, so go ahead, Eddie.
Who wants to go first, Steve?
You go ahead.
All right. I think when I got to Iowa, Robinson would take all the freshmen for about 6 months and train them on some basic things. And then Gable would kind of look at that mold of clay and kind of start fashioning it into a pottery pot, a bottle or a pottery bowl. And Gable realized that, yeah, we needed to have similar things. And that's why Robinson taught us the fundamentals, how to sprawl, how to shoot, how to set people up, how to finish, and how to get out of legs and so on. But Gable took it a step farther and said, okay, what does this individual wrestler need to do to get better that's different than what everybody else needs? And he would focus on that for that wrestler and he'd help them. And that's the innovation that Louie talks about a lot. Gable and his coaches did a wonderful job of taking each wrestler and coaching each wrestler on an individual level. Yeah, they're part of a team, but they're also individuals. And where one wrestler may be strong in one area, another wrestler may be weak in that area. So he would work together with those two wrestlers to help the weaker wrestler understand why the stronger wrestler is stronger in that area and what they needed to do to become strong themselves. And that was phenomenal. Case in point with me, Mike Mann, my senior year, would ride the ankles. Back then, they were allowed to ride the ankles. Well, he had Mike McGivern come in the room every day and ride me for 30 minutes like that, and I had to learn how to get up. So I was weak in that area. McGivern was strong. He taught me how to get out and how to get people that are hanging on the ankles away. It cost me a match in Cal Poly. Rick Worrell did the same thing, and he took me down and rode me out, and I couldn't get away because of the way that they were allowed to ride the ankles. Now you can't do that.
You know, I look at innovation from a learning standpoint. If you're learning, you're living, right? I go all the way back to our days when we were in 7th and 8th grade, as we mentioned, we didn't have a whole lot of money. And, but my dad was a licensed electrician, plumber and carpenter. And so we had lumber laying around, and Ed, being the mechanical engineer, you know, that he is, you know, he got these 4x4s and we built our own bench and went out to the junkyard, got about a 6 or 7 foot 1-inch bar rolled steel, brought that down, and that was our weightlifting bar. And then our parents got us two or four 50 pound or 25 pound, I can't remember what it was, but these discs, they were the cheapest discs you could buy, right? And so we had our bench, and we had those weights, and we were 7th, 8th grade. We'd after dinner, we'd go out in our little step down area in the back of our house, and we'd be banging on those weights. That's what we had, and it was a tremendous amount of competition between the three of us and everything we did. We would compete walking to school, who could walk to school the fastest. And that's no joke. But there was a tremendous amount of competition in terms of who could lift them the most, who could run the fastest, do the most pushups, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, building, you know, the point there on the innovation side is, you know, early on, I mean, we just, you know, had to figure out a way to do things and innovate because we didn't have the tools and we just didn't have, you know, universal gyms and things like that, that, you know, other people had. And that made us hard. I mean, we were some tough kids because we would work with each other and with, you know, all the things that we had. And it's continued on, you know, in life, whether it's, you know, in my life, developing different things, you know, for the Army, that have been pretty innovative and things like that. So, yeah, it's, you know, you learn, you've got to innovate, you got to adapt, you look at the exponential change that we're experiencing in the world today. If you're not learning and innovating, you're going to be left behind pretty darn quick.
Yeah, a couple of things I think that I really liked the conversation. Ed mentioned, you know, he had to cover off on his, you know, ankles. And the other thing Ed did is, you know, that was a weakness he had. So he minimized that, but he harnessed, you know, really harnessed his strengths, the things he did better. And that's where he innovated. And your innovation is going to happen around the things that are your greatest strength. And if it's your greater weakness, don't make it a blind spot for you. Protect it. But you're always going to innovate around what you do better than somebody else. You know, the reality is, Steve mentioned the word living. It's also survival. When I think of innovation, that ability to change, you know, how you are today, how you compete today to how you compete to tomorrow. You think about it, just from a business context, in 5 years, 80% of the businesses that started fail, right? And one of the key reasons they fail is they don't innovate. They don't change. They don't adapt. They don't recognize their weaknesses, and at least, you know, like riding Ed's ankles. I mean, you got to address your weaknesses, but you're never going to win through your weaknesses. You're going to win through your strengths. And then when I think about innovation, that's how I think about it. Innovation also makes you relevant. It keeps you in the game. If you're doing that, you know, you got greater odds of staying and winning and living and surviving.
Yeah, you know, and just to build on it, one step further. I mean, the learning systems that we had, that are these hierarchical learning systems, are not competitive. You have to have a flatter, more symbiotic type learning system, where the system drives the change. Your learning is part of the system, and the system creates the change. You're part of the change. And there isn't one person guiding it. The system is guiding it, and the inputs in the system and how you're connected with the system. It's about the interrelationships, you know, in the system. And that's probably been the biggest change over the last 30 years that we've experienced, you know, around the world is how do we adapt our learning system, to innovate and maintain a competitive advantage.
You know, the other aspect of that, you know, I know some things that are going on, where typically around innovation, new product development, those sort of things, you normally put an investment of 2 or 3 or 4 years into it. And what we've learned is, let's fail quick. Let's go at a faster pace, bring more people in. Let's have greater feedback loops. Let's speed up that process to success, but fail a lot more, get immediate feedback, and then go forward on that. And we've taken life cycles down, you know, from 3 years to, you know, 6 months in terms of that ability to, like I said earlier, remain relevant because some of the innovation we're doing in the company that I'm with.
You know, so in closing on this, the whole idea is that old adage, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. You invent new things because you have a need, you have a gap, you have a spot that you have to fill. And so necessity, to get that done, you have to come up with something. So you invent something, you innovate.
That's excellent. Great stuff. Really great information there. I guess for the last segment of the show, let's go one brother to the next. Anything that you wanted to share, anything we didn't talk about, any other stories or any other thoughts that you maybe thought about preparing for the call?
I'll start out. I have young adults and as children and something I told them is always do the next right thing, right? You always do the next right thing. And then, you become who you associate with. All right. So think about your network, and how, you can have, and again, it's kind of concentric rings, because your network has got to do different things for you. And so you've got to understand, I talk to my kids about this. Where do you want to be when you're 55, and how are you going to get there? And who's going to help you get there? What does that pathway look like? How much does it cost? How do you need to innovate to get there? Things of that nature. Find the coaches and mentors that can teach you and bring you along and show you the way. I'll just close on this. One of the guys that we've had experiences with, and I think we mentioned our high school coaches and Mark Fowler in particular, but Kirk Ferentz, the head coach at the University of Iowa. We're all Iowa guys, and we talk a lot about Gable, my experience interacting with Kirk Ferentz over the years is that you really got to think about how you define the best, college football coach in the country. My experience with Kirk is that he brings boys in and makes men out of them. Not everybody enjoys the process. Whatever star recruit you are, you're all that in a bag of chips, and you show up at a Big Ten program that, every year and over the last 22 years has put a bunch of kids, young men, into the NFL, giving them that opportunity. Kirk is one of those guys that I think is a tremendous role model his EQ, his emotional intelligence is off the charts. And, he's somebody that I've learned a lot from, interacting with him and all the other, great military officers and whatnot that I've seen. I think thinking about what the next right thing is and how do you get there, I think is a pretty good starting point.
That's awesome. Thank you very much, Steve.
Ed, you want to go next?
Sure. So I was 12 years old watching the 72 Olympic Games, and I saw Gable win a gold, John and Ben Peterson win. John actually won a silver, and Ben won a gold. And I think Wayne Wells also won a gold at 63. So I made my goal at that time watching that I was going to be an Olympic champion someday. Fast forward 12 years, 84 Olympics, I win a gold medal. And it was an accomplishment of the goal. But then I turned around and coached after that to help others be able to go out and, if they want to, win a gold medal. So to me, there's more to just goals than goals, but a goal has a beginning and an end. A lot of people, what they call goals is really just a purpose or something they want to do, a wish. It's not really a goal. I sat down when I was 12 years old, saw those wrestlers win gold medals, decided I was going to do that, told my parents, told coaches, and 12 years later, I was able to do that. Now, I didn't do it on my own. I had a lot of people help me, so you got to get in the right environment, but I was able to accomplish that goal 12 years after I set it.
That's phenomenal. Thank you, Ed.
Yeah. So, again, Gene, thank you for having us, and I'll close with a couple of things, maybe kind of how I started, I think, in terms of just the concept around peer group. There's an African saying that we had in our book, to go fast, go alone, to go far, go together. And that peer group is, my brothers and I, largely through the years, it's And we had wonderful teammates that became part of that peer group. So I would say environment matters, going together matters. And that's made a world of difference because we've had mentors, sponsors, teammates, coaches, parents that collectively they were our village and they made a difference for us. And they enabled us to do a couple things, I think. They enabled us to mentally outwork everyone and physically retool because we had, you know, we had the right people guiding us each and every day. And those examples that make you become a man from a boy. And Steve is right. You know, wrestling's one tough crucible in which you pass through to manhood. And there's so many great life lessons that one gets from the sport. But it's relationship. And that's one of the words we started out with in the beginning. It's if you're willing to have a relationship and, you know, work with each other as brothers, teammates, coaches, a community, there's lots of people that want to that care and want to help you. And I would underscore that's really been our journey of that, you know, because we've been willing to lean into it, take the next step. We've been the beneficiary of a lot of people that have wanted to help us through the years. And we're so grateful that they have and wanted to give it back. And that's why we kind of wrote Uncommon Bonds in a way to give it back. And so other people have sort of a hand or, you know, a guardrail where they can grab onto it because life is incredibly tough, as you know it. I mean, it can beat you up, and but that sense of you know, not being alone, being there with others, your brothers, you've got, you know, brothers. The brother thing's pretty special, but the larger brother group is your peer group, right? And like I said, don't go it alone. And I think that's a good, you know, just a good reminder in life. This, you know, this is meant to be a personal relationship based. World and you know, let's go together and let's stop fighting and let's come together and do good things together.
Thank you very much, Lou. Excellent great show we had today. Everyone needs their daily fill: faith, innovation, leadership. And that's what Uncommon Bonds is all about, a journey in optimism. I'll give the website one more time: Bannock Power of Three. That's the number three. So BannockPowerOf3.com. Are there any other websites or anything else that I should attach? You could always send it to me after too. That's,
you know, the book is out on Amazon. So the link to the book, it can make it easier for people, but I think actually in our website, you can click right on it. It's my recollection.
Yep. You can click it on there and there's a section about the brothers, public speaking, get the book today. So we want everyone to go there. Thank you very much. Excellent show. Great information. We'll get the show out. We'll send it over to you. God bless you all and God bless your families. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Appreciate
Have a good
it.
Weekend.
You too.
Take care.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.